Does everyone know what time it is? It's time for 1313 Harbor, the podcast hosted by Jasmine and her friends.
Welcome to 1313 Harbor, the podcast, where we're about to get into some sticky situations. Not really. I just like that. I'm Jasmine, and I have a very special guest with me this week, my very good friend, Heather. Hello.
Hi, guys.
Now, Heather has a very unique... You've worked at Disneyland.
I have.
You worked at Disneyland as a candy maker.
I did.
And we've talked about this before, and then you... I forgot how it came about. You mentioned something, and I was like, oh, why don't I ask Heather to be on the podcast? And you were like, sure.
So I made some TikToks not too long ago, kind of briefly, kind of like a too long didn't read version of, like, the history and of the candy canes, or not so much the history, but how Disneyland makes them and the big secret behind them. And it kind of went a little crazy. And then I saw your post and you're like, so what should I talk about? And then I was like, you know what? Let me reach out and see if she's interested. Because the job that I had as a candy maker, even though I was only there for a short amount of time, I remember it very visually. Like, I can recall everything that I did when I was there at the parks.
So cool. And I can't believe I haven't thought about interviewing you about it until now, because we have talked about it. It's not like it's a secret I just found out.
Yeah.
I was just like, oh, yeah, I should talk about people who've worked at Disneyland and, like, what that experience is like.
Oh, absolutely.
So let's get into your background a little bit. So where are you from originally?
Originally, I'm from Sullivan, California. I don't know if any of your followers are familiar with that town, but it's a little up north from Santa Barbara. It's a very, very small, quaint little town, and it's a little Danish village. The San Ynez Valley is what it's, like, typically called. It's mostly known for vineyards and wines, so they produce a lot of wine up there. And then Solvang is one of those blink and you miss kind of charming towns, so we always call it, like, mini Disneyland, because it's a very hot touristy spot and you can get, like, Danish food, and there's, like, a Hans Christian Andersen museum, and it's a very cute little town.
So what is your background with the Disney fandom?
So I guess a lot of it starts with my dad. Like, my dad, when I was, like, ye little, we had a pass in the 90s to the Disney parks, and it would just be us two, and we would go, and we'd have, like, it would just be me and my dad, and he would take me, like, after school when we used to live in Orange County. And then he is also an incredible artist, and he can draw like an animator. So I remember growing up, he would always draw me, like, Mickey Mouse and all that stuff, you know, kind of stoking the fire of my Disney fandom. And one of my favorite memories is when I would be doing homework, he'd say, okay, Heather, I'm going to draw Mickey Mouse flipping you off, but you gotta do your homework. And of course, when you're that little, you're like, yes, let's go. My dad only started, and he would always tell stories because he grew up in that era too, and he grew up in Southern California, and I loved those stories growing up, and so that evolved into me cosplaying and frequenting the parks. I had a Disney-themed wedding, so I love it.
When did you develop a passion for baking?
Probably when I was around 10 years old, and, you know, I just get those Betty Crocker mixes and just go to town. And I was always the one baking in my family too, so, like, I was always the one in the kitchen and making stuff. And when I graduated high school, I thought I was gonna do photography, and I went to a school called Brooks Institute up in Santa Barbara, and I quickly learned, you know, it just wasn't for me, and that's okay. So I ended up transferring to the community college and just kind of, like, floating around with, you know, getting GEs done as you do in college. And they had a culinary school, and I signed up for it, and I was like, I actually really like this. I don't like sitting at desk or being on set for long hours of time where you maybe do, like, an hour of work. I like constantly working with my hands, and I like constantly working in general. So that's, I learned that about myself real quickly.
I've actually, and to vouch for your baking, I have had your baking a few different times. And the cake you made for your birthday was the best cake I've ever had in my life.
Oh my gosh.
It was so good. And it was really pretty and it was like purple and like shiny, but it just tasted really, really good.
Thank you.
I enjoyed it very much.
I liked it too. I was like, I wanna bake for my birthday, but like if you're baking like a 3-layer 9-inch cake, like that between me and my husband, like we can't finish all that. So like I was like, I wanna share this with my friends because I can't party with them, but it's a way for me to kind of like party social distancing. So I thought it was a good idea.
Yeah, I let my mom eat the cupcake and she was very excited too. So
yay.
And I regret it because I wanted to eat both.
I'll have to do another cake drop then when I really bored in quarantine and I'm just like, I just want to bake something. And I'll just text everyone again and be like, who wants some cupcakes?
So what made you decide you wanted to make baking your career?
Kind of going back to, well, I work well in a physical environment where I'm constantly moving around and I'm not sitting at a screen, that's when I realized, okay, I definitely want to make this my career and I'm very good at it. And there's so many aspects in the culinary world and so many different varieties that you can go. You can bake, you can do confectionery work, you can line cook.
You are very into Disney cosplays. You are very good at them. I would say you mostly cosplay as Anna from Frozen, but I've seen you as other characters as well. But could you tell us a little bit about how you got into that? I think that's kind of how we met, too, was through cosplay.
Oh, absolutely. I think so. So I've been cosplaying since, I want to say, 2009, I want to say. And basically, so when I was in high school, I went to this high school on the East Coast, like a boarding school in Massachusetts. And every year there was Anime Boston, I want to say. And I'd always want to go to it. And I always want to dress up as my favorite anime character and go. But it was always during, I was always in the musical. So it was always during tech week. So I couldn't go. Fast forward to a few years later and I'm dating Adam and I'm like, yeah, I've always wanted to go to a convention and dress up in cosplay. And he's like, well, what about Anime Expo? And I was like, all right, let's do it. And like, I bought my costume off of eBay. I dyed my hair and my first costume was Kairi from Kingdom Hearts. And I remember going and I was like, I was hooked. It was instantaneous. And after that, I was like, I need to cosplay more. And, I'm not very good at sewing, so I usually commission my cosplays and my wigs, but I do like doing Swarovski work, so I like doing very small detail work on my costumes.
It's very pretty.
Thank you!
What is your favorite cosplay you've ever done?
Ooh.
Or like top few?
Honestly, anything with Anna. I love Anna. I'd probably say I also love Belle, too. So if you're listening to this, Michelle, I hope I make you proud. I absolutely love Belle. Any kind of poofy ball gowns. And 2015 Cinderella. I don't know what it is about that dress, but putting it on with the wig and the hoop and the petticoats and like getting your makeup done and plastering rhinestones on. I feel amazing. I absolutely love it. It's such a fun dress.
Even though it's so heavy and it's hard to breathe, and you're like covered in rhinestones.
Absolutely.
Like it's just so many. Like I think 20% of the weight of my Cinderella dress is just rhinestones, I think.
I believe it. They're heavy.
They're very heavy and they're numerous. So what made you want to work at Disneyland?
I think it's like anyone who's like passionate about Disney obviously wants to work for the company. They want to be a part of it in some way and somehow. And I definitely wanted to work in their culinary field, whatever that was. I wanted to do Central Bakery, which is where a lot of the main pastries and cakes and special event items get made. But there was also the candy making department. And so when Adam and I were moving down to SoCal, I was looking at their job listings and the candy maker position popped up. And I was like, oh, I can definitely do this. And I applied and they accepted me and I was like in heaven. I was like, wow, Disney wants me to work for them.
Did you have to like make something or was it kind of just based off of your resume? How did that work for them hiring you?
It was kind of based off my resume. And then for the final interview, I met with the managers and they were like, okay, so tell me how you temper chocolate. Tell me what degrees it should be at. And just like general like basis with mostly chocolate, because as a candy maker, that's what you work a lot with is chocolate.
Mm-hmm. Yum.
It was delicious.
Chocolate.
Chocolate!
So now we're moving into the meat of the episode, working at Disneyland as a candy maker.
This is where I spill the tea.
I have my soda. We'll pretend it's tea, but I'm not going to spill it because it's on my computer.
Okay. I've got water.
Metaphorically, I'm spilling some tea, though. Uh-oh. So what was it like working at Disneyland overall?
Honestly, it was very long and very never-ending. They literally, like, your whole life revolves around being a cast member, pretty much. And it got to the point where I would just lose time, like, concept of time, concept of days, because I was always typically working 40 to 50 hours a week.
Oh, wow.
But I was considered part-time. So, and a lot of those hours, I would be working nights. And into the weekends, too. So I would typically start my day 3, 4 p.m. around there. And then I would finish around 1 a.m., 2 o'clock in the morning.
So. Oh, wow. I know that's a complaint a lot of people who've worked at Disneyland is that you're part-time, but you're expected to give your availability as if it's a full-time job.
Yeah. They want your life, essentially. Yeah.
But they want to give you peanuts.
Yeah, and that was a huge wake-up call for one of the reasons why I left the company was I was doing a lot of work, and I talked to some of the chefs I knew. I was like, hey, is this fair? And they're like, nah, Disney's taking advantage of you. So that was one of the contributing factors to me leaving the company.
How long did you work there for?
7 months, I want to say.
That's pretty good.
So I left before the holiday season, mm-hmm. which was probably a good exit because the minute like October, September hits, like you have Halloween. And then after Halloween, you go straight into Christmas and they are just constantly overworking you for the holiday season.
What location did you work mostly at?
Mostly at? Mm-hmm. It was a tie between production and Candy Palace.
Ooh.
But I worked in all 5 kitchens.
Oh, what are the 5 kitchens?
So we have Trolley Treats in California Adventure, which is on Buena Vista Street. That's a show kitchen. And then there's also Honey Spot way back in the corner where the Winnie the Pooh ride is. Yep. That's another show kitchen. And then we have Candy Palace on Main Street, the original, the OG. And then Production Kitchen is actually right behind Hollywood Studios, kind of like where the Captain Marvel meet and greet is. Backstage there is where the main candy production kitchen is. And then the final kitchen is Marceline's in Downtown Disney. So you, when you're a candy maker, you literally work in all aspects of the park except for like the hotel resorts.
So that's separate. So like if somebody was getting married at the hotel, you wouldn't make their cakes, or someone who worked for parks.
Correct. That would actually be Central Bakery.
Ah, and then where's Central Bakery is the place you were saying behind Hollywood, right? Or is that a different place?
I don't know where Central Bakery is.
In your heart.
In my heart. Just right here. I think it's like on the other side of the park, kind of close to Toontown. Production Kitchen is the candy production kitchen. So whatever doesn't get made in the other show kitchens gets made in the production kitchens.
Oh, okay. Oh, that makes sense.
So I believe there's 3 to 4 copper kettles in the production kitchen, and then all the fudges get made in production, as well as like the peppermint patties and a lot of the chocolate dip squares, like the s'mores and the peanut butter. squares, and that's all I can remember off the top of my head.
The tiger tails?
So, going back to the different kitchens, each kitchen produces something different.
Oh.
So, Honey Spot, for an example, we do all of the marshmallow wands and all the marshmallow treats. So things like tiger tails and Cheshire Cats. And one of the things I used to make that I really didn't like making because it was kind of difficult were the Olaf wands and the caterpillars that were limited edition for the Main Street Electrical Parade.
Ooh.
Which I know is one of your favorites. We had a few of those treats. So that was Honey Spot. Candy Palace is a little more traditional. So we would do English toffee, brittles, which were one of my favorite things to make. Classic caramel apples, peanut apples. And so that's kind of like, and then in the morning, the main candy makers who've been there for like 20 or 30 years, like do the special things.
Ooh.
It's like the Rocky Road and all that stuff. And then moving towards trolley treats, all the cake pops and Rice Krispie pops get made there. And so you can get things like the little Mickey cake pops and the Mickey Rice Krispie treats that have like the M&Ms on them. We would do that. Marceline's does all the apples. So all the specialty apples. So the character ones. So like Mickey and Minnie. Sorcerer Mickey was one of the ones that I made. One of my favorite ones was the apple pie caramel apple.
Oh.
Which is amazing. I highly recommend it. It's caramel, white chocolate, and then the bottom, you roll it in a graham cracker crust, and then you sprinkle it with the cinnamon sugar. It is so good. Chef kiss.
Now you're just making me hungry. Was there something that you like specialized in, or was it like every day it was just something new?
It honestly depended on what kitchen you were scheduled to work in and also what they needed the most. Because once the product was made, there were these runners that would come by and take trays of the product to distribute into the different places.
Oh, is it like a lot of the things that were packaged, like that was like the kind of things you made? Or was it more things like behind the glass?
It was a little of both, mm-hmm. I want to say. Because we would also package like the toffees and the brittles per se, we would weigh it out and package it like right there. But some of the treats, they would just be behind the glass and you'd be like, I want that.
You had mentioned earlier that there's, I forget the term you used, but there were some like basically like on stage, meaning in front of guests, places where you could make stuff. So did you ever work on stage or were you just backstage?
I was on stage when I worked in the show kitchens, and the show kitchens were Trolley Treats, Candy Palace, Honey Spot, and Marceline's. So if you walk by those stores, you can see candy makers making the treats. The only time I wasn't on stage was Production Kitchen, because that was backstage.
Was it more exciting working on stage versus off stage, or was it like more pressure?
I enjoyed working on stage because I got to kind of interact with our guests, but not like a lot, because there's like this glass that is between you and the you and the guests, and you can't really talk to them. All you can do is just like wave and smile and just, you know, put on a show making candy.
One of the best examples of this is on Main Street. It's the Candy Palace. That's has a really good window that you can see people making stuff. Where is it for the one in DCA, the trolley one?
So you can watch them on Buena Vista Street, or you can go in and kind of like around the corner, you can kind of watch them. But I think your best view is on Buena Vista Street.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, I never noticed it. I mean, I guess I've noticed it, but I always am more conscious of the one on Main Street because there's always, it's like right there.
It's right there. It's the OG. It's been there since almost the beginning, pretty much.
And they're always making, like, yummy-type looking candies. So I was going to ask you next what type of items you baked, but you went over that already.
Yeah. I have a list here.
Oh, yes.
I can name it off. So it was marshmallow wands, caramel apples, including the special character ones, English toffee, nut brittles. My favorite was pecan brittle. That was my favorite one to make. And if you guys ever see it in the park, snag it. It's so good. And those are made in copper kettles. Cake pops, Rice Krispie treat pops, peppermint patties, and squares that were peanut butter or s'mores. I would also make marshmallow from scratch for some of these things.
Oh, wow.
And that was, I enjoyed that because I would do that in one of the fudge kettles. The only downside is gelatin is cow hoof. And when you put the gelatin in with hot sugar, it doesn't smell that great. It smells like you're on a farm. So anytime I would make it, a lot of my fellow coworkers would always complain about it. But what are you gonna do? You gotta make it for a lot of these products. So
what you're telling me is marshmallows have collagen, which is good for me. So yes. I should eat them.
Yes, daily. As a vitamin.
It's for my skincare. What was a typical day like working in a Disney-type kitchen or backstage on stage? Typical day.
Well, first I would have to, fight 2 hours, maybe 2 hours worth of traffic just to even get to the parks. I mean, that's a Southern California thing. And then I would have to get bussed in from parking from K-Lot. And that usually took 30 to 40 minutes. And then depending on where I was scheduled, I would typically walk to my kitchen. I'd say the easiest one to get to is production kitchen. So let's pretend we're going to production kitchen. So I'd walk underneath this tunnel. And if anyone's done any of the Run Disney races before, especially the 10Ks, it's that tunnel you run under. And so I'd walk under it, get to my kitchen, clock in, and then I'd wait for my lead, and our lead would go over announcements. And then after, we have our hairnet on, we wash our hands, and after announcements, we start going into the kitchen and kind of taking over from the previous shift. And the lead will kind of be like, okay, who wants to do this? Who wants to do that? You do this, you do that. And we're just pumping out treats for the rest of the night.
Huh. And then if you were on stage, it was similar, but just in front of people.
Yes.
Yes. But and a little more flair.
Yeah. And depending on what kitchen you were in, you would have a scarf and a hat that would correspond with that kitchen.
Oh, cute. Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
So what were some of your best experiences working at Disneyland?
I loved being in the show kitchen and I loved interacting with the kids. And I actually have a pretty good memory. I was maybe my second month working there. We had some product that we couldn't sell. It wasn't bad. It was just it wasn't shaped right. So they couldn't sell it kind of thing. And it was just going to get tossed out anyways. And these little girls came up to our window when I was making cake pops and they were enamored with the work we were doing. And I remember turning to my lead and going, hey, can I do a magic moment? Can I just make these girls' days and maybe give them these cake pops or, these Rice Krispie treat things? And she was like, yeah, sure. So I went out of the kitchen and introduced myself and got down on their level and was just like, hey, I've been working, really hard. Would you like these? And their eyes lit up and they were so happy. And the mom was just like, oh my gosh. And after that, they actually left a guest compliment for me.
Oh, nice.
Which is very rare for a candy maker to get because you don't interact with them other than just waving and smiling. So that kind of made, it was really nice and really made my shift and memories working in the park just a little more special.
Oh, so nice. Yes, always leave guest compliments for exemplary cast members. They always go a long way. Yes. So what are some of your worst experiences that you're comfortable sharing?
Oh, strap in, guys. So, obviously, the politics of Disney, the business, and the backside of it. Disney is very strict. And, I understand, but they also treat you like a number. And I slowly learned that as I was working for them. And probably one of my worst experiences was I needed to go see my doctor and I needed to get time off for that. And they couldn't guarantee me this time off. And something the managers would do is they would go up to scheduling and deny everyone's request for that week if they needed people on. And that's kind of scary because I still see my doctors up north from where I grew up. And I'm just asking, I'm like, hey, I just need one day to just go up and see my doctor. And then there's some drama queens at the Disney parks, especially cast members, those who take it like very seriously. Like when I posted my TikTok video, I got some interesting responses from current candy makers who thought I was ruining the magic per se, but I wasn't saying anything legal or any of that. It was just more based on, hey, like this is food safety and whatnot. This is important. So other than the drama queens, I'd say the worst part, and this was the main reason why I left the parks, was my uncle was diagnosed with this stage 4, I believe it was liver cancer. He only had weeks left to live, and he lived up north in kind of the Portland, Oregon area. And my mom reached out to me and she was like, hey, like, I know you haven't seen him in a while, but it'd be really cool if you can come up and just be with the family. And I was like, yes, absolutely. So I asked for either bereavement or just like a week off to say goodbye. And their response was, well, we need an actual death certificate to even consider bereavement. So I just gave them my 2 weeks, and literally right after my last day working at the parks, I was on a plane all the way up to Portland. So that was kind of a big wake-up call. Like, they literally treat you like a number, and they don't really care so long as they look good and they are producing constantly, if that makes any sense.
And I know that, like, if you miss for any reason, like, they give you, like, negative points, I've heard of, and, like, I've heard of people getting negative points for, like, things that, like, for funerals and, like, for things that they should be allowed to take off and it shouldn't be counted against you, but like...
Oh, yes. The point system.
Oh, yeah, I know many people who are not rehire status for Disneyland.
I think technically, like, I left Disney on good terms, so that was, like, my goal. I didn't have, like, many points, so, like, I was always on time. I think I maybe had, like, 1 or 2 points to my name, which is, I guess, nothing.
Just because they're so easy to get.
They're really easy to get. Like, if you are, like, 5 minutes late, I think that's a point, or, like, a point and a half or something like that. Or if you call out, that's points, too.
So we kind of, I think, touched on it a little bit. So Disneyland is very famous for their candy canes. It's something I actually didn't even hear of until, like, a few years ago, because they're sold out all the time and people will go at opening and get in line to buy these candy canes. And I remember you mentioned that you made them, and I thought that was really cool.
So I didn't make them, but I knew of them.
Oh, okay. I just remember we talked about the candy cane situation. Yes. Okay.
I mean, have I made candy canes before, like, in general? Yes. Have I made them for Disney? No. But I know all about, like, the backstage and the secrets of the candy cane, which personally, like, I don't think it should be secret. I think you should always know when your food is made and, you know, any sort of, like, allergens and where it's stored, maybe not where it's stored, but, like, you know, all that stuff. Because one of the secrets of the candy canes, drumroll please, guys, Disneyland candy cane production actually starts in June. And now you're probably thinking, well, if it starts in June, how can we don't see the candy makers, you know, work on them in the show kitchens? And that's because they make them on third shift. And third shift is their term for graveyard shift. And so the candy makers come in and they will bust out a couple batches of candy canes to be stored, because these candy canes are in such high demand. They can't meet this demand just by doing batches only during the holidays. So in order for them to keep up with this crazy demand, they have to start production in June.
And they can't even keep up with the demand making them that long. Like, I've never seen one in person because they're sold. I don't get to Disneyland at opening very often. So it's just amazing that, like, even making them for 6 months out of the year, it's still not enough.
It's not. It's crazy to think. And, like, you, how the it works is you got to figure out the schedule. So they have a schedule of when these you can get candy canes during the holiday season. And you can either get them at Candy Palace or Trolley Treats. The recommendation is get to the park at least an hour early, maybe an hour and a half if you want to, but like about an hour and a half. And then when you get through the gates, you go and you line up at Candy Palace and they will give you a wristband. And some of the wristbands have comeback times for them. Some of them do not. And once you have that wristband and let's say you come back later, then you wait in line and it's a pretty big line and you get your candy cane. And I think it's like a $15, $16 candy cane.
But they're pretty big, right?
They're very huge.
Yeah. They're not like a typical candy cane, like little skinny candy cane.
Oh no. And they are made by hand, which is kind of the traditional way that candy canes are made. And I don't know if their methods are the traditional methods that started, like, because, like, candy canes have been around for, like, what, 300 years? So I don't know if they're doing it more traditionally or, you know, kind of more modern, but I do have some notes here.
Oh, yes.
So I can tell you how, maybe not how exactly how Disney makes them, but how, like, a typical confectioner would make a candy cane. And basically what you do is in their copper kettle, they would put corn syrup, sugar, water. That's your base. You cook that to about 300 to 320 degrees, depending. I think Disney does 310. Don't quote me on it. it depends on who's making them, of course. And then after your batch reaches that temperature, you pour it on a hot table. And this is like liquid molten sugar we're talking about. And it's, if you've ever watched like videos of people like making candy in general, when you pull it up after it develops a crust, it looks like lava just like falling and oozing down. Now, typically, and again, this depends on the confectioner, you would want to throw down your dye on the hot sugar because the dye has kind of like liquid in it and you want that liquid to cook off. Otherwise it could crystallize or ruin your batch. And then you mix in the color and then you separate the batches and then the batches get thrown on a hook once it's reached a semi-cooler temperature and you're making kind of a figure eight on this hook. And this is like a 15-pound, 20-pound batch that you are throwing and aerating on this hook. So you have to have a lot of upper body strength. And you also have to be able to handle very hot temperatures. You're wearing gloves, but sometimes the gloves aren't enough. And I think there's an episode on Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives where Guy Fieri met with one of the candy makers, I believe his name was Rob. He passed away a couple years ago, but he was trying to make the candy canes and Guy Fieri couldn't. It was too hot and too heavy. This guy could not get it on the hook. And so Rob had to take over and like Rob makes it look like nothing. And Guy Fieri's just like, well...
Oh my gosh, so it's like athletic baking.
Pretty much. A lot of baking in general, you have to have a lot of upper body strength. Okay, so after you aerate the candy cane on the hook, you put it back on the table and you kind of form it into like, not like a block per se, kind of like a squarish block maybe. And then that's when you start layering your stripes on. So the stripes that you colored. And then you start rolling it out and forming it into those ropes. And then once you get a rope long enough, you cut it. And then Disney has like a little guide that they use to form it. Most candy makers just kind of do it by hand and let it cool. And then after it's shaped, it gets put on the cooling table. And after it's cooled, it gets packaged up and sold.
And then they're mostly peppermint flavored, but like there's other flavors of candy canes usually too, right?
I think Disney just does peppermint. Mm. It's been a while since I've been over there, but my favorite candy cane flavor would have to be cinnamon.
Oh, very interesting.
There is a place in Ontario, California, and I forget what it's called, but they hold the Guinness World Record for the largest candy cane ever made. And so they're another confectioner candy shop in California, and they do candy canes by hand. And kind of similar to Disney, like, you'd have to, like, pay or, like, get a wristband to, like, get one of their candy canes. But they have different flavors. And peppermint, cinnamon, and I think maybe citrus?
In your opinion, why do you think Disneyland candy canes are so popular?
I think it's because of the history and the tradition. And, like, as any Disney fan, like, we love history. We love Disney tradition. Like, we just eat that stuff up, literally. So the candy cane tradition at Disneyland started in the mid to late 60s, and the guy that I was talking about, Rob, he was kind of a part of that team that started it. When I made my TikToks talking about the candy canes, I was going through some of my comments, and someone in the comments said that they actually have a couple Disneyland candy canes from the 60s. So people not only eat these candy canes, but they collect them. And honestly, like, if you collect them, go for it, because sugar is such a high preservative that it will stay in its candy cane shape, like, forever. Like, it won't mold, it won't, like, go bad. I mean, it might get, like, stale, and maybe, like, the flavor oils might kind of disapparate over time, but I don't think I would eat, like, a 40-year-old candy cane. Like, that's definitely for display.
Collector's purposes only.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Have you ever eaten one of the candy canes?
Funny story. I'm not going to name names, but someone snuck me a little nibble of one of the batches of candy cane. It was kind of like I was in the parks and they just kind of like, it was someone that I knew. And like, here you go. And it was fresh too. Mm. And so like I hit it and I tried it and I was like, it's pretty good.
I think it's rare to get like a fresh candy cane too. Like, I'm assuming all the ones that go on Christmas trees are at least like a year or two old, probably. Maybe not.
Absolutely.
So I'm like, oh, it must, you know, it's an experience of having something that maybe you kind of take for granted, but it's like, oh, this can be made fresh and not by a machine and really good and not old.
Yeah. And it's handmade. So like, even if you don't get a candy cane that's made in June, you're still getting a candy cane that is made on Disneyland Resort property, made by candy makers and made by hand. It may not be the one that you see getting made right then and there at the kitchen, but you are still getting a candy cane that is made that year.
Are the Disneyland ones is hard? I don't know why I imagine them to be a little softer than regular candy canes.
They are typical candy canes, I would say. Okay. So they have that, like, crunch to them, and that, like, once you, like, kind of chew down on them, they get a little soft. And then, of course, the beautiful peppermint flavor.
Mm. I don't know. In my head, I imagine them like those, like, you know that See's candy, those peppermints? I don't know why I just imagined it being a big one of those.
I don't think I've seen those at See's Candy. I'll have to, like, look it up.
They're after dinner mints, so they're a little soft. But they're not, like, they have a little crack to it, but not too hard.
Oh, like the Andes mints?
Kind of. Like that. Yeah, yeah.
All right.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's in my head. But, okay. So, it's good to know it's, like, a regular candy cane. So, you might not know this, but, because you didn't work during the Christmas times, but, like, how crazy would you think the candy cane demand gets? You were explaining it earlier, actually, about how people like would get a wristband, wait in line. Like,
it gets really crazy, and that's why people line up for the parks for these. And it's insane how popular these candy canes get. But if you think about it, like, they're making it old school way. they're doing it very traditionally, and I think that's kind of the appeal of the candy canes, as well as the fact that they've been doing this since the 60s. So it's traditional Disney history that is constantly going on, and I think that's why people love the candy canes so much.
And it's almost like a local secret because they're so hard to get, and I didn't even know about them. I've lived in Orange County my whole life and been a Disney fan my whole life. Like, they're just not super common. Like, you have to be kind of a deeper fan to even know they exist. And yep. It's the prestige, I think, of getting one, too. Like, oh, every year I get a Disney candy cane.
Yeah, and the crazy part is they only do this at Disneyland. They don't do this in Florida. They don't do this at any of the international parks. Just at Disneyland.
We like our peppermint here. One day I'm going to try one. I don't know how, but I'm going to try one day.
Maybe when the pandemic all rolls over, we can all get up together
and yes.
get a candy cane.
I did it for Rise. I'll do it again.
There you go.
I could do both. I'll stand in line and get a Rise fast pass. So you had mentioned earlier they start making the candy canes in June.
Yes.
And I found that very surprising. I was going to ask you, what else did you find surprising about candy canes? But I think that might be the most surprising thing is that they're made in June.
Yeah.
And not Christmas time for Christmas. Yep.
I mean, they're both made in Christmas time, but also in June. They just start the production in June so that they can meet the crazy demand when the holidays hits.
When it gets closer to the holidays, I'm guessing they probably have everybody making them, because you're saying it was made during the third shift.
Actually, you have to audition to do candy canes. There are three roles. There's one person that rolls the batch. There's one person that's called the hooker that hooks and aerates. I got a funny story about that. And then there's another person that shapes the candy canes. And then I think there's like maybe a couple other people in that kitchen that packages and kind of expedites a little bit of the process. But going back to the hooker part, when I was working at the parks, one of the managers approached me while we were kind of talking about candy canes and all that. And they're like, "You would be a great hooker. You should audition for one." And I'm like, "Excuse me?" And they had explained it to me that, like, no, like, you're very tall and you can reach the hook so you can pull the sugar down. And I was like, oh, okay. When they're making these candy canes, the kitchen is always in between 90 to 100 degrees.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So that was a huge no for me. And I don't know why they keep the kitchen that. I mean, I do know why, and I understand why. But, like, I look at other confectioners and candy makers, and they definitely don't keep their kitchen that hot. So I wonder if it's just, like, a traditional thing that they do or, you know, just kind of like a reassurance that their batch won't like go bad or crystallize or any of that. So,
oh, they just don't want to pay for air conditioning.
Actually, funny you mentioned that too. So when we work with chocolate, aside like from the candy canes, the kitchen has to be like in the mid 60s to like early 70 degrees, because when you're working and tempering chocolates, you don't want it to set very quickly. You want it to be that perfect temperature so you can work with it and get it to what you want it to do. Otherwise, it does this thing called blooming. I don't know if you've ever had like an Easter candy or like an Easter chocolate where you unwrapped it and it has like that little white texture to it. So that's blooming. So that is chocolate that was either too hot and too cold, and whoever was like bolding it or working with it quickly, and it just kind of turned.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's usually with Easter candy, because I guess that's the candy that usually has the most shape to it.
Yep.
Okay, so stepping away from the candy canes, which was very fascinating. That's actually how this all started. We were talking about the candy canes.
Oh, absolutely.
What was your favorite part of the job?
I'd say I definitely enjoy working at Candy Palace. I loved doing the apples, and I also enjoyed the cake pops. When I was there, the live-action Beauty and the Beast came out, and so we were doing rose cake pops. Now, they were pretty tricky to do, But I think that's why I liked it, is it was really difficult working with the colored chocolate. They require a lot more work and tempering, if you will. And because it was such a challenge, I think I enjoyed it a lot.
Like, I like to be tested.
Yeah, actually, I'll have to send you a picture, but I have a picture. Someone took a picture of me making the roses.
Ooh.
So I'll send you some of those pictures.
Yes. What was something you wish Disney would have made, or you thought would have, like, done really well if they had made it, but they don't make?
I'm not sure, because Disney makes a lot of things. I think the candy production, I think they're doing quite well. It would be fun if they, kind of going back to the whole candy cane thing, if they did like hard candy lollipops. So like those Whirly lollipops, like those are obviously factory made. Like they get those somewhere else. But like, wouldn't it be cool if you got like a traditional handmade lollipop made by a candy maker by Disney?
That would be so good.
I think that would be really special.
And they could do them in, like, different character colors or different themes or...
Oh, absolutely. Kind of like the apples. Like, yes. They could do, like, different themes.
You could have, like, a purple and yellow one and then put a sun in the middle and it's Rapunzel.
Yes! Instead of just, like, wrapping it in shrink wrap and having the shrink wrap have a picture of the princesses, like, they could go beyond just the candy canes and, like, do something like that.
What is some advice you would share with any aspiring bakers?
If you're interested in baking and pursuing it as a career, just keep practicing. Practice in your home kitchen. There's so many YouTube videos out there and how-tos, like technology. When I started baking back then, like YouTube was just starting out, but there weren't really a lot of tutorials or how-tos back then. A lot of what I learned was on-hand experience. So I've always worked in restaurants, and I've always kind of weaseled my way into the kitchen and kind of like made friends with the chefs and the bakers. And that's kind of how I got a lot of my experience outside of school. So that's one way, and just, you know, other than that, just keep practicing.
So before we get into the main topic, the one I know you're most excited about, do you have anything else you wanted to share about your experiences at Disney that we may have missed?
Some of the experiences I shared, I know weren't exactly lighthearted, and I know a lot of when we talk about Disney and whatnot, we brand it as like, it's always magical and whatnot. So if anyone out there wants to work for Disney, I say go for it. I think you definitely should understand and learn firsthand like how this corporation works, and especially how they treat people. It just kind of opened my mind to a few things. And I'd say, yeah, that's... Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like, sometimes I go off on tangent and then I stop and I was like, wait, am I making sense?
So, yeah. So, you know, as much as like we're complaining about Disney and some of their practices, because I do feel like Disney is someone who should hold themselves to a higher standard, just me personally, because I feel like they tried to hold themselves to a higher standard. But, you know, don't let this deter you. Like, I know people who've had a lot of fun working for Disney. It's like any job. You're going to have good moments, bad moments. Try it out for yourself. You never know. Like, if it's
exactly.
Something, yeah. But just don't think it's going to be perfect the whole time.
Absolutely. Like, it didn't work out for me, but that's okay. Like, that's my personal experience. And if you want to go for it and you enjoy it and you love it, awesome. Like, I wish you the best of luck. I will cheer you on and be a cheerleader, because the company needs more positive people working for them. And me on the sidelines, like, I will definitely keep speaking up for you guys and keep holding the company accountable, because I want you guys to work in a better environment than what I worked in. Like, I want you guys to have that, so...
It definitely can get better, I think, a lot better.
But I think so.
And I think also it depends who you're working with, who your lead is, who your manager is, what department. And for every, yeah. like, person who works for Disney for, like, a month because they hated it, there's people who've been there for 20, 30, 40 years.
Oh, yeah.
There are people who clearly, like, love working there. So, you know, I think it kind of depends.
Yeah. And I've talked to some of those people who have been there since, like, the 70s or 80s or whatnot. And the one thing they would always say is it's not like it was in the past. Like, we had it so much better in the past, and like now it just kind of sucks. And that was kind of heartbreaking for me to hear that. And even people who would work there for 15 or like 20 years, like when I was working there, they put in their 2 weeks and I was like, you know what, I'm leaving. I can't handle this anymore. Like, you guys are not the same. And I get that. Like, even Walt Disney said, like, we're always growing, we're always changing, we're not going to be the same. But I think they're changing for the worse than they are for the better. And I want them to change for the better. And so the cast members are the heart of the parks.
Oh, yes.
They are the ones who run the show, not the guys in the suits. Like, these cast members put their heart and soul in this. And I absolutely love and adore them for that.
Yeah, and they're the ones who get yelled at the most.
I know. So going back to the whole leave a compliment for a cast member thing, I've got, every time I'm in the parks, I try to do that. Like, I go to City Hall and I'm like, hey, even if the person just like waved to me, I'm like, this person waved to me. Compliments.
Showered.
this person acknowledged my existence. Compliments.
Yeah, because like nobody who works there has to like go above and beyond. So when they like, they don't get more money necessarily.
Yeah.
So it's nice that, and it's good, I think, for like promotions, and it's good because then like that will help promote people who are a bit more invested, a bit friendlier.
Absolutely.
Yes. So now let's get into the best part of the episode. So Heather is a human cat. She is just a cat. She's a cat who owns other cats. No, you don't even own the cats. They're your roommates. Yep. I love cats, but you are a cat. Like, that is your life.
If I didn't go in, I mean, growing up, I really wanted to be a vet or like work with animals, and I even like did a bunch of my Girl Scout Gold Award and Silver Award working with my Humane Society and local therapeutic riding academy. So I love cats so much. I've always had cats growing up, and I've always been very like invested in taking good care of my cats. And like my first cat, she's a tortoise shell and her name was Demon Kitty, and she hated everyone but me, and she's like my ride or die, like,
aww,
my ride or die child. And I love cats, guys.
I remember after my cat passed away, you were like, you need to come over, you need to hug my cats, have some cat therapy. And I did, and it was great.
Yes, once this whole COVID thing has blown over, like, you'll have to come over again and, like, spend time with my cats.
Yes. So, basically, all that introduction, we're going to talk about the cats of Disneyland. So, just a brief little history, very, very brief. So, cats have been a part of Disney's history since pretty much the beginning. Walt used them as, like, a natural pest control. There's still spots all over the park. I don't know if they're – people always say they're trained to stay in certain sections. I think cats just kind of naturally – like certain areas, like you'll always see the same cats in the same areas. I find like there's one that lives in Grizzly River Rapids, kind
Francisco.
Of
Francisco.
He lives in like that little foresty area.
Yes, there's two of them, but they're both long-haired tortoiseshells. But here's the funny part, and I'll have to look into this more. So they're tortoiseshells, which is another breed of calico cat, and calicos are typically female. So I think one, it's very rare for a male to be calico, but it is possible. And I think they might be very rare male calico cats.
They're unicorns.
They're Disney unicorn cats, yeah. I obviously haven't like checked per se, but like those were the names I think fans gave the cats, I want to say. So going back to the history, it's funny you say that, the history, because my dad always told me a story about the cats. And his story, and whether or not this is true, you can fact check me, this is coming straight from my dad. He'd always say that they had a pest problem, and before they looked in the cats, they would put cyanide around the parks. And one of the cyanide traps they would use is they would like stick cyanide in a hot dog and like put them in the Mark Twain River. Well, one day a kid got a hold of one and ate it and got really, really sick.
Oh no.
And so they were like, well, we have to do something else. And mm-hmm. that's when they're like, well, cats. And if you think about it, like, Disneyland was built on this kind of farmland, this orange grove, if you will. And a lot of farms and vineyards where I grew up, like, I grew up with feral cats, like, you have cats to keep the pests down. Mm-hmm. And it's a very natural way, and you just kind of keep them around, and they do their thing, and they stay away from you because they're feral, and you can't really pet them. They're not house cats. They are hunters. And so I thought that was interesting that they have cyanide and hot dogs and let it float down the Mark Twain River. Whether or not it's true, I don't know, but this is something my dad always told me. And again, he kind of lived in the area during the time. So
I heard that before they built inside Sleeping Beauty Castle and put the attraction in there, it was filled. That's where the cats lived. So like it was just filled with cats. And one day Walt went into there and he picked up something and it was covered in fleas. And then he was covered in fleas.
Oh, no. I'll have to look that up. Yeah. That sounds like a fun story.
But yeah. And so they've been around. So you used to like taking care of them essentially because they're kind of on their own per se. Like, I don't think anyone like guests probably, I see, like, if you are a guest, do not run after the cats. Let, you know, it's a normal cat. Now, if they come up to you, that's a different situation. But like when I'm at the Disneyland, if you're really like, I want to see a Disney cat, the best bet is go to the Disneyland Hotel. There are two cats there and they're very friendly. There's like a silvery one and a black cat. The black cat, like, if you're sitting at the bar of Trader Sam's outside, like, it will come up to you. I've got to pet that cat. It will let you pet it. But don't force a cat. Let it come to you. Some cats, like, that cat loves pets. But, you know, some see children and they run. The silver cat let me pet it, too, until it saw a kid and then it ran.
Oh, yeah. They're like, kids, bye. And, like, that's the thing with the cats at Disney. Like, they are feral cats. And feral cats are very much on their own and semi-wild. So it is very rare to go to Disney and have a cat that just wants this attention and affection and all that, which I think is why Francisco and the black cat at Trader Sam's, which has come up to me and I got to pet him. I've seen actually four different cats around the Disney Disneyland Hotel. I'll have to like pull up pictures. Maybe it's the same one. I'm not sure.
Another good spot is I notice at dusk, a lot of them hang out on the tram route in that, like, planter along the tram route from Mickey and Friends.
Oh, I look there all the time.
And I think maybe I notice them more at dusk because that's when they're starting to, like, get going for the day. But, yeah, it's fun to play Spot the Cat in there.
Oh, absolutely. And the Honey Spot Kitchen is kind of along that path. And when I would have shifts at Honey Spot, there was a colony of cats there. And Disney does have feeding stations for the feral cats, which I think is important because when cats go out and hunt and they take care of the rodent population, and let's say there's no rodents left, what are the cats going to eat and do? Well, you have to keep them around, which is where the feeding stations come in. Now, I don't know too much about the feeding stations, but whenever I'd work at Honey Spot, I would always keep a bag of treats with me. And during my lunch break, I would go out and I would just kind of like, you know, shake the bag and they knew exactly what it meant. And I would go and give the kitties some treats.
And has arrived.
It got to the point where the cats, anytime I would shake the bag or they see me, they know. And I would just get swarmed by all these cats. And it was amazing.
I think you showed me a video of it once of like, or at least you feeding them. So
yes.
Allegedly.
One of my friends took a illegal backstage video.
Allegedly, this video may or may not exist.
Who even knows if this exists? And basically, I had my little treat bag, and you just see the back of me, and then all of a sudden, these cats come out, and like, other cats are following me, and I'm kind of feeding them with the treats.
I will say the cats are a little like, not quite feral because I think they're around so many people. They're not like, who is, what is this? Like, and they know, but yeah, cats in general are a little finicky. They're like, to me, they're like a cross between like a feral cat, not quite a house cat, but like an outdoor cat.
Yeah. Like a typical outdoor.
They're city cats. Like they see, and yeah. they're around people all the time. But yeah, mostly look in wildernessy areas, areas with not a lot of people, and just have a keen eye. Especially during the day, you're not going to see a lot of movement. But yeah, they're just, what other kitty stories do you have? Because you love those cats.
Ooh, I got a crazy one. Okay. So I got off my shift at like 1 a.m. and I took the bus back to K-Lot, and I was with one of my other coworkers, and she parked pretty close to the exit. So she was like, here, jump in my car and I'll drive you to your car. So I was like, okay, that was really nice, because we were just like talking and whatnot. She kind of dropped me off in the vicinity of where I usually park my car. And all of a sudden I hear screaming. And I'm like, oh my God. And my friend was like, okay, bye. And she just like took off. And I was like, oh, by myself. And something screaming. So,
oh gosh.
And this video is on my TikTok too. I turn a corner and there are these two feral cats having a full blown turf battle. Their heads are pretty much in each other's faces and they are screaming at each other. And whenever you see a cat fighting, especially like a very intense feral cat fight, you do not want to get in the middle of one of those fights.
No.
You do not want to insert yourself in one of those fights. So of course, like any other like Instagrammer, like I take up my phone and I start recording it and they're just like screaming. They're not like fighting. They're just like being very vocal and just like, I don't know, cursing at each other, I want to say. It was going on for like a good 5 minutes. And finally I just slowly walked up to them and they finally was like, oh, there's a human, and they just dispersed. So
it's like West Side Story.
Yeah. It was full blown. They're like, you're on my property. And that was crazy. I was like, oh my gosh. So that was like a crazy cat story on Disney property that I have. Other than that, I'm pretty lucky at like running into cats, I want to say. I just like, I'll come across them and like, they'll just be like, hey, what's up? And I'll be like, hey, what's up?
I always wondered if any of the cats get groomed, because the ones I've pet have been very, very clean.
Interesting. Well, cats are very clean in general. Like they're just very, they're always taking baths. They're always very particular about their fur. So it wouldn't surprise me if some of the cats are just like, oh, I gotta look good. I gotta take a bath.
Yeah, especially that kind of silvery white one. Like it like looked brushed, and I'm like, are you just somebody's cat that hangs out here? Like, because there's houses that are close by, especially by the Disneyland Hotel. So I always wonder.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, do you just like hang out here at night? And you're like, some mouse delicacies.
maybe a cast member keeps a brush and brushes them. Kind of like how I would bring the cat's treats. That could be a possibility.
Especially the hotel ones, because I feel like they are very like, hello. What's up? Yeah. Welcome to Disneyland.
Like, hi, I'm a cat. A Disney cat.
I'm shocked that Disney doesn't have, like, Disney cat events or, like you know, like, what do you call it? The, like, 80s night, like, something like that, but with cats, and they have all the cats out. And, like, but you'd have to make it, like, very particular. Like, you'd have to have cast members standing, like, oh, there's typically cats here. Like, you can spot them, but, like, be really quiet and respectful.
Kind of like on a safari, like,
yes.
Look at this Disney cat in the wild.
If you look, do you see? Squint really hard.
Watch as it stalks its prey.
I always wonder, I've never seen one with like a mouse in its mouth, but I always wondered if like some just go around like, doo, 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 doo.
I know. Like my cat Kristoff, like obviously we don't have like a rodent problem in our apartment, but he does this thing where he takes his feather toy and when I'm sleeping, he'll jump up with it and drop it on me. And that's actually a common thing that cats do, is they will catch their prey. And they will bring it to their humans as, like, a gift, essentially. Like, hey, look at what I did.
I always had to leave my door closed so my cat wouldn't do that. Because she would catch – we had a lot of mice. Like, she would catch sometimes 5 in one night. And it scares me to think that she's been gone for almost 2 years and, like, how many rodents we must have now. Yeah. Because she would – and she would leave them by my front door a lot. Do you have any final thoughts about baking, working at Disney cats?
I know there's some downsides to the company. But there's also some good sides too. And I think if we kind of like speak up about the downsides, we can make the company, or not like we can't make the company, but like we can kind of like be like, hey, we want these changes. We want you to do better kind of thing, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
Other than that, like if we look at Ratatouille, like anyone can cook. And I fully believe that. And same as anyone can bake, you know, just keep practicing and putting your best foot forward and, you know.
Just keep swimming.
Just keep swimming. Just keep swimming. Just keep baking.
Do you have anything you want to plug, like where people can find you, your TikTok, Instagram?
Yeah. So my biggest platform's actually TikTok. Okay, so my TikTok is The Frozen Kittens, and there's an underscore in between the and kitten. So that's my TikTok, and I do a little mix of everything. So it's a little bit of cosplay. It's a little bit of me speaking my mind. I go in-depth on the candy canes, or not like in-depth. I'd say I've gone more in-depth here on this podcast than I've ever done before, and I don't think anyone's really done that too for the candy making aspect of Disney. So TikTok, and then I do have an Instagram. That one's mostly cosplay, and it is magic_cupcake_cosplay. And then I also have a Twitter. My Twitter is Heather G. Field. So it's pretty much just my name, Heather Greenfield. But
because you think like, okay, there's people who make the food, but I don't know if people necessarily know like there's different divisions and like who cooks your fries is not who makes your chocolate. And like, so it's interesting to see all the departments and like the detail that goes into everything.
Absolutely. And I think it's important to know where your food comes from and who preps your food. And because people do have allergies and sicknesses where they have specific diets. And out of culinary school, one of the first jobs I ever had, I worked for this restaurant. They were on Food Network and they were gluten-free, vegan, and paleo. And I didn't understand like why that was important until I met the customers. And a lot of our customers were very, they had celiac disease or Crohn's, or like they were allergic to this or allergic to that. Like very rarely did I get that vegan who was like, you know, I'm a vegan because I love animals and like, you know, PETA and all that. Like a lot of our clients were people who can't really go out to restaurants because they can't have what a lot of places have. And we provided that option for them. And I thought that was really cool. And it kind of opened my mind to the culinary world just a little bit.
Well, thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Absolutely. Thank you for inviting me.
A special thanks to our Patreons, Mandy, Tori, Sean, Jennifer, Tiffany, Abby, Valerie, Jenny, Wynette, Lauren, Ashley, and Danny. Please visit our website at www.1313harborthepodcast.com. Please email your questions, comments, and episode requests to 1313harborthepodcast@gmail.com. Please rate and review us wherever you get your podcast. You can find us on Twitter at 1313harbor and on Instagram at 1313harborthepodcast. Thank you again for listening, and to all who come to this happy podcast, welcome!